Freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it on to our children in the bloodstream. The only way they can inherit the freedom we have known is if we fight for it, protect it, defend it, and then hand it to them with the well-taught lessons of how they in their lifetime must do the same. And if you and I don't do this, then you and I may well spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it once was like in America when men were free.
Welcome back, everyone, to Patriot Coalition Live. I'm Matthew Nugent.
And I'm Jason Marocek.
Thanks for joining us today. Our goal is to create a timeless resource to teach about the U.S. Constitution and the proper role of government, the importance of America's Judeo-Christian heritage, and how to defend against threats to our republic. We have an email, folks. We would love to hear from you. Please email us, send us a note or a question at freedom@patriotcoalitionlive.com. That's freedom@patriotcoalitionlive.com. We would love to hear from you. Also, guys, we are blessed to have some wonderful sponsors. Remember that you and I, we empower those to whom we give our time, attention, and dollars. So when you spend your time, attention, and dollars with what we call the three-headed beast of mainstream media, big tech, and big business, companies like Amazon, you empower this beast to exert tyranny upon us. Amazon has banned some Dr. Seuss books. Really?
Does that?
Jason and I have got something planned, guys. Stay tuned. It's coming very soon. This will help America and liberty. Now, however, when you buy from free speech businesses, like with the courageous Mike Lindell at MyPillow.com, using the promo code Free Market, all one word, Free Market, you get a 10% discount, and you empower businesses who love free speech and won't cancel you, censor you, call you a racist or a terrorist. But on the contrary, we share the same values. We love freedom. We love liberty. Okay. And when you go to MyPillow.com using the promo code, very important, of Free Market, you help us too. Okay. So also please visit us at PatriotCoalitionLive.com. We've got a lot of companies we're excited who want to participate with us, with what we're doing. Okay. So help them, help us, help liberty in our country. Okay. So y'all ready?
Yes, sir.
Let's do this. Okay. Title of today's episode is U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 3, the Senate. This is part one of two. Now, here's a recap first. We are in Article 1 of the Constitution, which deals with the legislative branch, okay? It's the longest, most important, and it had actually the most conflict because It has to do with representation and law. And we're continuing that and talking about the Senate. Before we get going, guys, I want to let you know that this takes study. It is Jason's been doing this for, you know, almost professionally. Okay, he's the executive leader of the conservative organization, the Patriot Coalition. He has given many speeches, talks, presentations. He's even been on national television. So I would consider him an expert at the Constitution. Now, I mean, he and I both went to West Point. We both care very much. But, I mean, Jason is an anomaly in America. And thank God, because we have him here and his expertise. Now, this is some stuff we're going to dig into. And we're doing our best to lead by example. Because for America to be strong, America needs to know where it came from and understand what made us exceptional. And it's in our Declaration of Independence. It's in our Constitution, which we're obviously discussing now. So it may take a few repetitions of this episode for you to get it, and that's okay. An old pastor of mine, I should say previous pastor, Pastor John, he's also a Baptist, but he baptized my kids, so we call him John the Baptist. True.
That's funny.
And true story, you know. And he said, guys, if the Bible is worth studying, you should study it your whole life. Like, you can read the Bible and say, I read the whole Bible in 3 months, or, you know, fill in the number. Or you can do what we've been influenced to do, is to study it our whole life. Similarly, if you're going to study the Bible your whole life, not just read it, but think about it, meditate on it, pray about it. You know, similarly, and I'm borrowing the wisdom from Pastor John, John the Baptist, modern version. Yeah, modern version, still living. Great guy. Former Marine, by the way, if you're out there, Pastor John, you know, shout out. Is that the Constitution is worth studying. So it's worth studying our whole lives. And so candidly, understanding the material to the point where I can speak cogently to it requires time and dedication. It's not easy. Both Jason and I, like I said, are doing our best to lead by example. So we appreciate you, our audience. Obviously, for your financial support, for being here with us, and for walking along with us. And because what you are doing to understand this, you're going to pass it down to your friends, your neighbors, your children, your grandchildren, because that is what America needs. It's going to take an army to fight. I could get banned for using the word fight, okay? To push back against leftism, you know, communism. It's going to take an army of Americans, of patriots. And we're doing our part to educate you, but what you do, the individual, matters, okay? We're speaking to every single one of you. So that said, get ready.
Yeah, no, great points. You're exactly right. I mean, we just very much appreciate everyone coming along beside us on this journey. And so let's dig into it today, right? So Matt has already said, you know, we're studying Article 1, Section 3, and then just Clause 1 today, because it was probably the most contentious clause in the Constitutional Convention. So the whole section, Article 1, Section 3, again, deals with the U.S. Senate. Clause 1 specifically discusses how senators were elected, how many there are, what their term was, you know, who elected them. And as we've said, and we're going to say it again, it was extremely controversial, so much so that the convention almost fell apart because of the divide between the two sides. So that's why we're doing a whole episode just on this clause. And then in our next episode, we'll discover the rest of Article 1, Section 3, which deals with the rest of the Senate and their powers. So having said that, let's read Article 1, Section 3, Clause 1 of the Constitution. And it says, quote, "The Senate of the United States shall be composed of two senators from each state, chosen by the legislature thereof for 6 years, and each senator shall have one vote." That's it. One
30
sentence.
Words.
30 words. And this almost blew apart the Constitutional Convention because of the, you know, how controversial it was. And so in discussing this, let's talk about some of the things that did not make muster, right? Because this will start to give you an idea of the back and forth between the different sides, if you will. And frankly, it came down to the more populous states versus the less popular populous states. Mm-hmm. Okay, so in terms of electors, now when we say electors, just keep in mind, so that the word electors is a general term. We know that generally in the Electoral College, which is like a proper noun. It's a specific institution, but the word elector just means somebody who elects a member of a public office, okay? So in this case, we're talking about who elects a senator. So some of the ideas that were batted around back and forth in the Constitutional Convention that did not make muster, one of them was if the members of the U.S. House nominate a candidate for their state, and then the legislature of that state would vote yes or no. So as an example, in Florida, where Matt lives, the members of the Florida delegation in the U.S. House of Representatives would say, you know what, we want Matt to be the U.S. Senator. And then the state legislature of Florida would say yes or no on Matt, right? So that was one idea.
Interesting.
Yeah. Now, another idea is that groups of states might come together and form a region within the United States. And from that region, a senator would be selected. So I don't know, maybe New York, New Jersey, and Delaware might be a region. And then from that region, a senator or senators would be selected.
So that wouldn't be a good idea because it would fracture our country. You would have factions of states who would say, hey, listen, I want this senator, because the senator for the founding fathers is almost as important as a president. It was meant to have that much stature and represent that much wisdom. So if they would have done this, it would have accomplished the exact opposite of what the Constitution was purposed for, and that was to create a strong union. So it's a good thing they didn't do this one.
Yeah, no, it would have introduced a whole new set of factions that people would have had to contend with. In fact, in the convention, Madison points out, James Madison points out that, you know, if you have a region with a large state and a small state in it, then it is likely that even though that the most qualified person for senator might come from a small state, because the large state wanted to have the influence and they had the population, only their candidates would make it into office. So we wouldn't get the best candidates for U.S. Senate. Okay. And then, you know, Edmund Randolph, another delegate in the convention, he suggested that a smaller Senate, he didn't want a large Senate, which was wise. And he said, and I love this quote, it was to restrain, if possible, the fury of democracy, right? So remember, they were opposed to a democracy back then. And, you know, the fury of democracy essentially just means that it's very tumultuous. You've got all sorts of people and ideas that are coming together and fighting with each other in order to get their chosen point across, or their bill across. And he's like, we need to restrain the fury of that democracy. I always like that.
In terms of the word democracy, there's a big difference between democratic and democracy. Mm-hmm. When you hear democratic, it's an adjective. It describes something. It means people have a say.
Yep.
When you hear the word democracy, you should think mobocracy. Okay. Because in a pure democracy, and I'll borrow something from David Barton, the great American historian, and he said, democracy can be, I think he got it from Benjamin Franklin, actually, but I'll give this attribution to David Barton. He says, democracy is like two wolves and a lamb deciding what's for dinner.
Yeah, voting on what's for dinner. Yeah.
Yeah.
It
was Franklin. Okay. Yep. So David Barton is my original great history teacher. So that's another good one not to have implemented.
Yeah, no, it's a great point to make. You know, democracy and democratic are two different things, right? And you know, we should probably say, you know, in the last episode, we talked about, you know, representation in general. The subject of representation in the Congress was one of the most controversial subjects, but specifically, the representation in the Senate was probably the most debated topic. In fact, you know, Matt and I kind of joke, you know, because as I go back and I read through some of the records of the Federal Convention, you know, they break it out by clause of the Constitution, or at least the index that the editor did. And the listing for Article 1, Section 3, Clause 1 is super long compared to everything else, because there's so many references.
Dozens. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
It was, pages, right? So again, it was a very contentious debate. Uh-huh. And because of the divide on the representation in the Senate, the proposal at one point was made, look, we're not getting anywhere. We've got to go back to our states and get some feedback from, you know, the leaders there and the people there.
So they're saying, let's take a pause. And if that would have happened, that would have been the end.
Yeah, no, they realized that. Well, eventually, you know, somebody brought that up and other people were like, look, if we don't do this now, we may never meet again. Remember, this was take two of a constitutional convention. They tried to do this in 1786 in Annapolis, and they didn't get enough representation. So this is already their second try. And they said, look, if we take a break now and we go back, we may never get this done. So thankfully, they stuck it out and they persisted. So let's maybe talk about, there was a few points at this impasse that they had about who elects the senators and how many there are and in what their representation is, right? Mm-hmm. So there was a couple of points during the debates that, in my opinion, were the kind of the swing points where they they were pivotal points that allowed them to come together and figure something out. Because there were several instances of delegates in the convention that from the larger states who said, there's no way I could vote for a constitution that involved equal representation in the Senate. Meaning, you small states like Rhode Island and Delaware, there's no way you should have the same number of senators that I do as Pennsylvania or Virginia. And despite that, they still came together and they were able to come up with a compromise. And I will tell you, in my opinion, and I don't think I'm too far off in this case, this is why I say our Constitution was divinely inspired through the work and the prayer. Thankful to Benjamin Franklin for suggesting that, that these delegates came together. They appealed to God to make sure that his work was being done in what they are doing to preserve the liberty that they granted them. Right. Amen. And so through that, they were able to come together. And it's a testament to not only what God had given those delegates, but their perseverance and their wisdom to see it through. So having said that, here's a couple things that I think are what turned this conversation around. The first one came from the delegate. His name is Rufus King. And he said, as the fundamental rights of individuals are secured by express provisions in the state constitutions, why may not a like security be provided for the rights of states in the national constitution? So he's essentially saying, look, we've already figured this out. The state constitutions protect individual liberties. Why can't the federal constitution, the general constitution, protect state liberties?
That's right. We've been speaking in the context of representations for the people. We also need to create a constitution in the context of state representation, which the delegates obviously agreed to.
Yeah. Now, both of those things were critically important. Both the states had to be represented and the people. And then the second point that someone made, a delegate, was Roger Sherman. And he said this, quote, if they vote by states in the second branch, meaning the Senate, and each state has an equal vote, there must always be a majority of states as well as the majority of the people on the side of public measures. And the government will have decision and efficacy, meaning effectiveness. They will be able to decide things and it'll be effective. So he's essentially saying that if we give equal representation to the states, and the people already are represented in the U.S. House of Representatives, or they will be, then in order for anything to get passed, you have to get the approval of both the people through the House and the states through the Senate. So they'll both be involved in those decisions and they'll both be protected, because if one doesn't like it, that House of Congress will just vote it down, and vice versa. So it was a brilliant compromise.
Yeah. So what you see again and again and again, which has come up recently in the 2020 presidential election, is the states' rights, the power of the states, the power of the state legislature. And in fact, recently in a conversation, I won't recall the entire conversation because there's some profanity, but in a conversation with President Zhou, the trader in chief, the Chinese communist subcontractor. That's right. I said that. And it is true. It's documented.
Sorry, folks. He said it.
He said it. You know, will I be banned? I don't know. Jason's been banned far more than I have, so I need to catch up with him in the pursuit of liberty. But it was a conversation on the phone between the great Governor Ron DeSantis. We love him. He was in a conversation with Joe. The president. And basically, the president was saying, "You need more bans. You need more closings. You need more maskings." And future president Ron DeSantis. I don't know if he's going to run or not, but Governor Ron DeSantis said, "Ain't doing it. I am not going to do it." And this is what the president said next, and you can look this up. He said, "I will close down Florida." Those aren't the exact words that he used, but the president threatened to close down Florida and say, I won't let anybody travel to and from Florida. And he said, and the great honorable Ron DeSantis said, Joe, I'm not doing it. And he said, I will be addressed as president. He says, I'm not going to do it. And he said, blank you. And he hung up on the president because of states' rights. You understand that? Mm-hmm. A lot of people have been leaning on, you know, the central government. People say federal government, but it's actually, you know, central government to be accurate. You know, save us, save us. We shouldn't do that, okay? God made us with a beautiful brain, hands and arms and legs to work and move, and we should do that. And states' rights, which was designed here in the Constitution, there was so much fighting over this, provided a balance through the Senate and also obviously through the governors. You know, that's another clause we'll cover later, but it does matter. The point is states' rights are so critical to staving off the offenses of tyranny. Yeah. And the wonderful Ron DeSantis gave us a model of, you know, hey, how to fight for his people, which I'm one of and proud of. Funny thing is he did such a great job and we opened up before Texas did.
I was going to say, you know, hey, Matt, you know, just between you and me and maybe, you know, a few thousand of our closest friends here listening at that, you know, because of a lot of the stuff that DeSantis has been doing here in Texas, the proud state, the proud, great state of Texas.
Great state.
Some of us were like, man, that guy over there, Ron DeSantis, he's doing the things that we want our governor to do. So yeah, hats off to him.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm sure if – I don't know if he'll listen to this, but I'm sure he would say thank you. So, all right, since we're talking about electors, who votes for the senators, okay, it's really important now to discuss the 17th Amendment.
Yeah.
What's the 17th Amendment? Okay, all right. In 1913, the 17th Amendment – changed the electors of the senators from the state legislatures to the popular vote. So now when you go to vote every November, you vote, well, it's actually every 2-year cycle, you vote, okay, for senator this. Before 1913, for the 17th Amendment, it wasn't there. It was the state legislatures who chose their own senators. And how they chose their senators, it's in the Constitution, is up to the states because states run their own elections, okay? So Jason, tell us, brother, was the 17th Amendment, the states giving up their power to the central government through the popular vote, was it a good idea?
No, it was a terrible idea. it may be, it's probably among the worst amendments that we have. And here's a couple high-level reasons why. First of all, the states gave up their representation to the central government. The states are no longer represented there. We just now have more people who are represented there. And second, the senators, they're no longer beholden to the state to protect them, et cetera. In today's government, they're basically beholden to the fickle passions of the mob, right? Because they're now voted by all the people. You know, here in Texas, we have like 30 million electors, you know, citizens. Mm-hmm. So now they're beholden to them. So they gave up their representation in the states gave up their representation in the federal government or the central government. And now they're no longer tied to those states. They're tied to the people. Bad stuff.
Yeah, so let's take a kind of common sense approach to this, okay?
Yep.
In the context of Texas, we still love Texas. God bless Texas.
Yeah,
it's not going to go away anytime soon. So in the context of who elects the senators, what group of people can better make decisions for, example, the state of Texas? 30 million Texans, okay? Realistically, they are most interested in their daily lives and what they can do for their families and their future, right? Okay. Now, compare those 30 million great Texan citizens to 181 state legislators, okay, whose job is to study legislation, understand what's best for the future of Texas, for the present and future, who think long term. Okay, that's what they're supposed to do. Okay, who's going to make the better decision for the state of Texas and be more in tune with what's on the horizon? Obviously the legislatures, okay?
Yeah.
And so they act as the ballast of a ship.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's the same thing for the senators.
Yeah. If you think about it, you know, how are US senators best able to come to a consensus about what is best for Texas? You know, who is going to be, as Matt said, more in tune? who's going to be studying the issues mm-hmm. more? Is it going to be, you know, Joe and Jane citizen down the street who's trying to muck out a living? Or is it going to be, you know, the state legislators who are in this every day and trying to figure out how they can defend the state from encroachment, how they can right. make sure that the economy grows? It's going to be those legislators who, of course, in turn are elected by the people. So the people still have their say. They can say, hey, look, if I don't think that a state legislator is going to be electing the right U.S. senators, then I choose somebody else, right? So they still have a say, but it's easier to come up with a consensus when you're only being influenced by 181 legislators here in Texas versus 30 million.
There we go. So go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, so, you know, some of the main purposes of the Senate, you know, even from the beginning, or, you know, originally were, one, represent the state. You know, two, we have to defend the state against encroachments and, you know, overreach from the central government. And it's also, as Matt said, I mean, I like that term ballast, right? The character of the Senate was supposed to be made up of men of character and of wisdom and, you know, forward-thinking statesmen who could act as that ballast on a ship, you know, and, you know, if you're not familiar with it, the ballast of the ship is, you know, in a tumultuous sea where the ship may get tossed around and it goes to and fro based on, you know, whatever the waves are doing, the ballast helps kind of keep it steady. And that's what they wanted in the Senate. They wanted to make sure that the legislation was going to be pretty constant, that it was going to be derived from the same principles and conform with the Constitution and not just whatever the whims of men and women wanted on any given day.
Got it.
So what happened after the 17th Amendment? So that was all what it was supposed to be, right? But now after the 17th Amendment, and again, remember, we're talking about that small little phrase in Clause 1 that says that they will be chosen by the legislatures thereof, meaning that the senators would be chosen by the state legislatures. After the 17th Amendment, when it became now the popular vote that will elect them, the Senate is now responsible, and they're basically influenced by all these passions of the mob. That was originally supposed to be the purpose of the House of Representatives, and still is, right? They're supposed to have that influence of the people. The Senate was supposed to be representing the state. So this was a huge step in the wrong direction on the scale of liberty, right? Towards pure democracy, which, as Matt articulately, you know, eloquently pointed out earlier, is a bad thing. In fact, if you remember what James Madison said about democracies in Federalist Paper number 10, he said, quote, "Democracies have ever been spectacles of turbulence and contention. They have ever been incompatible with personal security or the rights of property, and have in general been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths." Right. So, and you can think about France as an example, the French Revolution, 1793 to 1794, mobs basically took over the country, and they just started killing people. They were beheading people, you know, the guillotine, as they say in French. You know, they killed like 40,000 people, you know, almost 17,000 of those by guillotine. So instead of a democracy, our Constitution, it's set up as a republic, and it has to be. But the 17th Amendment is what's supposed to move us closer, or that's the effect is it moves us closer to that pure democracy. So
in when you guys are out there and, you know, you hear people say democracy, that's undemocratic. Okay. It is, we are, is a republic. Okay. Or another way to say is representative democracy. I mean, we talked about this in previous episodes. We need to continue to talk about it because we'll never outweigh what the mainstream media does. And they said, that's democracy, democracy, representation of the people. Listen, if you own media, if you have a strong influence over people's emotions, you definitely want a more democratic government. Why? Because you can control it. All right.
Yep.
So 90% of media, if not more, is owned by leftists, and it's a propaganda tool for, you know, the Democratic left. So they're going to push for They're playing the long game, folks. They want a more democratic, a more emotional, a more fickle mob, because you know, people who are emotional are easier to influence and control.
And so, not only that, but if you can offer them stuff, right? If you can get them to vote for you, because you can now directly get your vote from them, and you can offer them stuff. What better way to control?
Free stuff.
Yep.
You got it.
So let's take a look at, again, the 17th Amendment was a bad decision. And there's a couple ways to look at this, right? So one key way to look at it is through the 10th Amendment. Remember, the 10th Amendment provides for states' rights. It basically says any authority or power that isn't granted to the national government is reserved to the state governments, right? And so in terms of state representation, the senators are supposed to represent the interests of the states in the national legislation. But if the 17th Amendment moves that focus away from defending the states and now really is moving it towards placating those fickle masses, then you aren't really able to defend the states like you're supposed to. So why does this matter? Here, maybe an example. Let's take, the education. Education is not something that is granted to the central government in terms of their authority. So that means it's the state's ability to provide for their own education of their own children. Well, now that the 17th Amendment has been implemented and the U.S. senators are now responsive to the people, now they can get money for the education lobby. They can get, all the people want, hey, I want the best education for my kids. I want all sorts of money to be spent on them. I mean, it's just natural for us. And so now that the senators are responsible and responsive to them, they have to kind of placate them. And so now they're going to try to solicit legislation at a national level, at the federal level, to spend money in the states. And that's not the way it was supposed to be. And so along with that money comes these ties to, well, we'll give you this money, but you've got to be talking about, you've got to be teaching out of books called, Johnny Has Two Daddies, or, you've got to make sure that everything's inclusive and equal, not about what, reading, writing, and arithmetic, but along with that money now comes these ties. And that's not what they wanted. And so the 17th Amendment was a bad choice. It moves it away from defending the states and now placating the masses. Another probably recent example, here we are on, what is it, March 5th in 2021, and the Congress is trying to pass a bill, the $1.9 trillion, China virus relief bill or whatever they're calling it.
Yeah, they haven't even spent the rest of the money from the previous one. So,
yeah, if you're a U.S. senator, you should be standing up on there in Congress saying, absolutely not. This is not the way we're supposed to spend money. But because the people want more money, they want that stimulus, they're responsible to the people. And so what are the U.S. senators going to do? Oh, sure. Yeah, you can pass money and you can give us that money to all of our people because they're responsive to the people, right? Okay, so those are a couple of examples. One more I'll throw out there. And this one comes, I was actually having a conversation with another buddy of mine, West Point grad from 84. He and I joke. And so if he listens to this, he's probably going to laugh, maybe. But he doesn't get his say. So he calls me. He's like, yeah, Jason graduated from West Point when it wasn't as hard. I graduated when it was hard. And of course, I retort with, yeah, but I graduated after they invented electricity. So, there's one and there's
another.
He's
an old grad.
Yeah, he's an old grad. Anyway, so he brought up this point, and it's a really good one. Supreme Court justices have to be approved by the U.S. Senate, right? So that means now when our U.S. senators decide on who's right to be on the Supreme Court, are they responsible to defend the states? Or are they responsible for whatever the people want them to do? If the people want them to vote for a Supreme Court justice who's going to allow for, Obamacare or abortion, because that's the popular thing at that time, the U.S. senator is going to respond and say, oh, okay, that's who I should vote for the Supreme Court. Whereas before it was, I'm going to defend what my state wants, right? So that's another good example of why it's important to defend the state's rights, not as a U.S. senator and not just the people. So last piece of that is essentially, why is it good for, or why is it bad for the 17th Amendment to change the way that the U.S. senators are elected? Pretty much anything that the 10th Amendment touches, anything that is not in the authority of the federal government, that's the reason why we should have U.S. senators who are elected by state legislatures. It basically removes that focus from U.S. senators from defending against the encroachments of the federal government to basically placating those, you know, their new masters. So in the next part of Clause 1, we're talking about the number of senators, right? So just so you know, so we're wrapping up the whole piece about how those U.S. senators are elected, you know, who gets to elect them, the electors. Uh-huh. So now we're going to talk about just another piece of that Clause 1, which is, you know, what number, how many senators there should be, right? And I'm going to read a quote here. Actually, I've done a lot of talking. Matt, why don't you read that quote from Madison? This is what he says about the number of senators.
You bet. The use of the Senate is to consist in proceeding with more coolness, with more system, and with more wisdom than the popular branch. So with more system, that's actually what he said.
Yeah, he did. In fact, you know, one of the other quotes he had, he said, quote, "The example of the Roman tribunes was applicable. They lost their influence and power in proportion as their numbers were augmented or they increased. The reason seemed to be obvious. They were appointed to take care of the popular interests and pretensions at Rome because the people, by reason of their numbers, they could not act in concert. And so they were liable to fall into factions among themselves and to become prey of their aristocratic adversaries." Essentially, they're saying that, look, the more representation you have, the more those people are going to fight because they're going to have their little factions. And the more they fight, then it leaves the powers to be, the aristocratic influences, to just have their way. That's what they want. They want us fighting. So keep that in mind. And as Matt said, you know, obviously it's about the coolness. They want those senators to be level-headed. They want them to be far-seeking, their vision to be off in the distance, right? And then George Mason, he was another one who had a great comment about the number of senators. He said, quote, "The state legislatures also ought to have some means of defending themselves against encroachments of the national government. In every other department, we have studiously endeavored to provide for its self-defense. Shall we leave the states alone, unprovided with the means for this purpose? And what better means can we provide than giving them some share in, or rather to make them a constituent part of the national establishment?" So we have to include them in order to defend themselves. So each state really should get that that same number of senators to do that. So, and then a last piece is really about the term of the senator. And here the delegates in the Constitutional Convention, as we talked about the ballast, we wanted long terms to provide that stability. We wanted that institutional knowledge so that they wouldn't be turned over every 2 years rather, like the U.S. House of Representatives. And we wanted that coolness and separation from the passions of men. So the longer term allowed for the U.S. senators to not be as much influence. You know, imagine if, you know, right after some riot, the Senate, you know, the people are clamoring for their senators to say, look, you know, we need you to change the laws to say X, Y, and Z, and all X, Y, and Z are completely unconstitutional. Even though those U.S. senators are supposed to represent their state's interest, because they're there so long, they can say, look, the people are going to figure out that this was a passion of the time. And, you know, 4 years down the road, they're going to say, yeah, that wouldn't have been a good idea. Yep. And so it's my job as a U.S. senator to stand in and say, look, I understand what you're saying, but I'm seeing the bigger picture right now, and I'm going to vote against that. So that's why they wanted to have those longer terms. And of course, it provides a sense of respect and inspires confidence in other nations, right? Right after the War of Independence, we still had, you know, we owed debts. We didn't really have relations, let's say, with Great Britain, at least good ones. And in order for them to have the confidence to have good relations with us, they had to have the confidence that, you know, we were going to be stable. And so having our best and brightest and, mature statesmen in that role would encourage other countries to have good relations and treat with us, right? To make treaties.
Right.
So that pretty much covers it for Article 1, Section 3, and then Clause 1 of the Constitution, which deals
30
with...
30 words.
Yeah.
30 words.
30 words, one sentence.
We actually cut that down a lot, guys. And what you've gotten so far, and Jason's going to wrap things up here in a second, is this is not your starting college. This is probably close to a master's level of teaching, because Jason actually read the notes written by our founding fathers. This comes from that. So you can rely on this, because we don't put anything in here. I assure you, Jason's like, no, Matt, it's got to be documented. So you can rely on this. And Jason did most of the talking because he knows so much about this. And he was on a roll. I didn't want to stop you, man.
Yeah, no. And sorry about that. And, Matt's point, it's, look, you can read the Constitution, but unless you're going to read it for understanding, it's just going to be a bunch of words on a piece of paper. You have to read it for understanding. And if we're going to expect that when somebody comes up with a nonsensical argument for what we should do with our country, mm-hmm. and we expect them to understand the Constitution and say, you know, tell me why that is how does that conform with the principles of liberty or what the Constitution says, then we ourselves should do the same to make sure that we understand it, right? So, okay, well, before I summarize, I just want to remind everybody and encourage you to support the businesses who are fighting the good fight, especially Mike Lindell at MyPillow.com. You know, Mike has been sued for $1.3 billion by Dominion Voting Systems. Those are the knuckleheads who, you know, happen to get their voting systems in many of the states. That's $1.3 billion with a B. Now, he has taken a strong stand for liberty and has been very outspoken about how Dominion Voting Systems played a huge part in the election fraud of 2020. So men of courage like Mike, they need our support. We've got to stand behind them. So go to MyPillow.com. Find something that you want or you need or maybe a gift for a loved one. Mm-hmm. And at checkout, make sure that you enter the promo code free market. That's all one word, free market, and you'll get a 10% discount too. So when you go to mypillow.com and use the word free market, you help Mike Lindell at MyPillow in the good fight against the cancel culture. And of course, you help us too with this podcast. So a quick summary. Article 1, Section 3 deals with the Senate. Clause 1 deals with how we elect them, what their term is, how long they're, who's going to elect them. So let's read it really quick once more. The Senate of the United States shall be composed of 2 senators from each state, chosen by the legislature thereof for 6 years, and each senator shall have 1 vote. Again, it was a really contentious debate. They went back and forth almost to the point where they had to dissolve, or at least, take breaks from each other, right? And go back to their states. Fortunately for us, they stuck it out and they persevered. Mm-hmm. And they figured out that the purpose of the Senate really should be to represent the states, to defend them from encroachments from the central government, and to provide that stability, that longer term stability in our Congress, to make sure that the states are represented. So remember, in the beginning, originally, the intent was that the legislatures in the states would elect those senators because they were the ones being represented, not the people. The people had their own house. They already figured that out. They were going to do the House of Representatives. But after the 17th Amendment, horrible amendment, probably one of the top 2, maybe 3 worst amendments, now the people who vote for the U.S. senators are now the people and not the states. So we essentially have 2 houses of Congress who are representing the people and nobody defending the states, right? So that's what that 17th Amendment did, and that changed the whole intent of that part of the Constitution, which is why we need to repeal the 17th Amendment at some point. Okay, so that wraps it up. Gang, thanks again for sticking with us and listening to me drone on about all this this important stuff.
You did great, Jason. And folks, like I said, that was probably a graduate level master's degree. And it is based on authentic firsthand accounts of what actually happened. So thanks for doing all that research, Jason.
You showed me. It's my pleasure.
It was amazing. And you put it in a way that most of us will probably have to listen to this a couple more times. The big theme is that the Senate allowed us to protect states' rights. And the 17th Amendment kind of got us away from that. But who knows if and when that will be repealed. But we're smarter today. So, folks, thank you very much for joining us today. Remember, please visit us and shop our other sponsors at PatriotCoalitionLive.com. We'd love to hear from you. Please send us a line or a question, freedom@PatriotCoalitionLive.com. If you're not already a regular subscriber, please subscribe where you get your podcast. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you here next time.
See you next time. Bye, gang.